Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life.
Welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. We are bellied back up to the bar today. A returning guest to the bar who has bellied up with us, been here before. Doug Dreyer, he's back. He's going to teach us how to collect stuff, how to take people's collections from them, sell them for way more than they ever knew they were worth.
All right.
retire out like a pirate. Doug, welcome back, brother.
Hey, man. How are you, brother? Good to see you again.
Good. How are things? I have bottles of water here. Do you need me to ship those out to you in California?
Boy, you know, we could use a lot of water. And now, you know, the bigger problem is that they've decided they're going to start changing the way they allow people to have pigs in California. So they're talking about pricing out pork. So our bacon's going to go sky high. So not only are we have no water, but more importantly, we're going to have no bacon. And I know my children will have a revolt. It'll be like that scene in Airplane where they're saying, you know, hey, by the way, we don't have any pilots. And as a side note, we're out of coffee. And people start right. Going crazy.
The coffee was all that mattered.
Yeah. And we're out of coffee.
Well, I saw that on the news. But as always, we're going to get into everything with Doug because Doug got all of our California news, all of our California information, everything we need to know. We'll just put a little bit of pressure on him. But we got to do our housekeeping first. As always, over my shoulder, we got our board, sticker, and a cause. If you've got something out there, some cause you believe in, something that you're pushing for, Doug's got some stickers in hand. He'll have to get those sent out to us. We have sticker and a cause. You contact me. Tell me what your cause is. I'll give you an address. You send me your stickers. I'll read all about it on the show. Put them up here on the board. As we can see, the most important sticker, that big giant Raven sticker up there. You know, got to, you know, them birds are going to take another ring this year. you know, it's going to be a LaMarvelous day. Just keep that in mind. You like that. You got to hear, I can't remember which one of the coaches is when he says Lamar. He's always like, Lamar, one of the Ravens coaches. That's so funny. We've got that. And the other most important thing is, and I'm getting close, I think I'm going to get banned from a couple of yard sale sites here any day now, is make sure that you take a moment, folks, and share this to any and all of your yard sale sites. If you belong to a podcasting site, make sure you share away to them because, I'm figuring sooner or later one of them's going to ban me. I got some woman from one up here in Albany that every time I turn around, she's like, this doesn't fit our needs. I'm hoping that the one, though, that I do like the page, it's called Back Issues, and it's all comic book back issues, that before they ban this one, they take a moment and realize that that's what we're going to be talking about today, is back issues and comic books and all the wonderful things that are comic related. But as I'm doing this, so Doug, how's it feel to be back at the bar, brother?
Man, I'm always excited to be back at the bar. Always excited to talk to you. I was just telling my friend that the last time we did this, man, was one of the most smooth, fun, conversational podcasts that I've done. So I was very excited to be coming back here for you.
Well, that was your first too, wasn't it?
That was my first. I've done a few side things on the, you know, around there, but was really excited to be coming back to the bar.
Well, we are glad to have you back, but anybody who was tracking us this week, watching what we were doing, I was putting a lot of pictures out of Doug over the years at San Diego Comic-Con, SDCC. We're hoping one day we'll get him out here on our side of the pond, our side of the country, I should say, and see if he'll come out to NYCC.
Yeah, working on it. I've got a business thing we can talk about in a bit with the guy in Buffalo. So
really,
I'm doing some New York stuff at some point. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you. So my best friend Ken and I, one of my good friends is down in Cape May, down in Jersey right now. We got our tickets, and I'm going to tell you, I hope that – does Reed Pop do SDCC also, or is that just NYCC?
I don't remember Reed Pop being there, no.
So Reed Pop, who puts on NYCC?
Sure, yeah. It's the San Diego Comic-Con is a not-for-profit based in San Diego. They do San Diego. They do the Orange County, Anaheim. They're a private entity.
So they're just out there, just
here. Just out here, yeah.
Well, thank goodness for that, and hopefully they're not as scummy as Reed Pop was this year.
Yeah.
I have no problem in telling them. It was horrible. It was the worst experience. So my best friend and I, we've been going now. This, I think, was our fourth or fifth straight year. So they, for years, they've had like a legacy purchase.
Sure, sure.
Long as you verified your email, which kind of told them you were still going to be going, you're going to go.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. So then they come out and go, well, that day is going to be blank. But if you give us $100, you can get your tickets a week earlier. Now, you may not be a legacy. You're nobody. You can get them a week earlier, and you can get into the exclusive stuff.
Yeah.
But those of us that are legacies, we ain't getting into none of that stuff. We're going to just have to wait. And I get it with COVID and all that, you know, less tickets being sold. You know, Lloyd Kaufman, Troma Films, Troma, Toxic Avenger.
Yep.
That's Lloyd Kaufman. He started that.
Sure.
And Mike, I can't think of Mike's last name right now. It begins with an H. But I had Lloyd on. He said he's paid for a booth and everything. And they won't get back to Troma Films.
Yeah.
They're shady this year.
It's, you know, I don't know much about Reed Pop. I've never dealt with them. Like I said, I've grown up going to the San Diego one. I grew up in LA and would drive down there. They've been a not-for-profit based out of here. Actually, they have their own museum, the Comic-Con Museum in San Diego, which I've done a bit of work with, that is really dedicated to the pop culture now. It's really anything. It's a celebration of the visual arts, but they have a board. They have an entity that they have to follow along with. And so because they are a nonprofit, they have a lot of, they have to be,
they have more
oversight, and they have to be transparent. And so while I think a lot of people could complain about how hard it is to get tickets, how expensive it can be, they are doing what they can to make it as fair as possible. There is no legacy. You sort of all go there. They do have a lottery system in a sense where everybody signs in. If you're a returning person, say you get an email in November and you would be put into rooms, and then you'll go in kind of in a lottery system from there. Then they have another lottery system for people who have not attended, and it sort of breaks it down, tries to spread it out a little bit. But yeah, there's no legacy system at all.
Oh yeah. See, they have like a legacy system, and it's still the virtual line, but you get like an entire week. You're supposed to be it's almost a month before everybody else. But we normally have been going 2 days, and I, like I said, I get it, but it was like weird. So you're seeing like, cause they had a full extra day early, we only got Thursday. Couldn't get any other day. Only got Thursday. And then they turned around and were like, you could just see it. It was like, and I sat online for hour and a half. It started at 10 in the morning, and I logged in by 10:20 and sat for like an hour and a half.
Ooh.
Trying to And it was hard. It was like this horrible feeling of like every so often it would refresh and be like, 90% of Saturday is sold.
Yeah. That's the worst. And for San Diego Comic-Con, you would get, they'd say, okay, we're going to start releasing tickets at 9. Here is your code to get in. You don't have to enter until 9 o'clock because it doesn't matter the order you're in. You're going to enter at 9. Here's your code. Then you would put into a random room, and then you would sit in that room until you go into the next checkout area. But you're right. As you sit there, it says, Friday is sold out. Saturday is sold out. Then they have the real, like the pop culture, you know, Never Tell Me the Odds, Han Solo getting in on tickets. Right. And stuff like that. But so usually San Diego, it's about 30 minutes until there's no hope and then you're done. So it's not an hour and a half of waiting as much as it's 30 minutes. And they say, we're not opening the rooms till 9. So like by 9:30, you're done.
Well, I can answer this question for Amanda Love. You just missed it. Doug has never been to NYCC, but where I said, I was telling you earlier, this Friday, we're going to have our first three live guests. It's going to be Amanda Love, Frida Munchon, and you'll have to tell me if Cammy or whoever, because my wife and I on August 14th are going to our first drag show.
Hey, and really, that is a theater, that is pop culture. I mean, it's amazing how well the drag culture ties in. I have a theater background, so I certainly know a lot of people who've done those things. And the amount of character construction, the amount of pop culture research, and the amount of really current events takes place into all of that. It's astounding and really is an incredible art form.
I was corrected, and Sherry Love, not Cammy, is going to be there. I apologize, James. Sherry Love. I'll say it one more time. Sherry Love will be there. No relation to Amanda Love. But yeah, so that's why we had a little technical difficulty at the beginning of this. Doug and I, he's looking at me like I'm supposed to be the professional and know what I'm doing here, as I'm like unplugging things and trying to figure out why this mic is not working, why this isn't working.
Because you're like Doctor Who in the TARDIS, pulling all the things and pulling levers until it starts flying.
That's a whole nother conversation in and of itself. New Doctor Who character, the woman, yes or no?
I actually enjoy her. I was not a fan of 12. I don't know if I found Capaldi a little dark and brooding. I'm a huge 11 fan. I was a big Matt Smith fan. I enjoyed David Tennant a lot. I really liked him, but Matt Smith for me was the guy. I loved Amy Pond, Rory, River. Those were the ones I really liked. So I did turn into the gal 13, and I enjoyed her. I thought she was enjoyable. I thought she was energetic and creative. It was a bit of a different vibe. I liked it. I liked it more than I liked 12.
See, now I didn't like Capaldi's first episode, which was the
dark.
It was the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yes, in dark. London. Hard to hear.
He was much darker of a character, but I felt better about him going forward. But I will tell you, when you talk about all of them, and who was 10? He was the guy that just did the one.
David Tennant.
No, Tennant was, or then 9. Who was before 10?
Christopher Eccleston.
No, really? Yep. The actor that was before Tennant? Because he did one season.
He did one season. Christopher Eccleston was sort of the modern restarter of Doctor Who. Tennant took over, did three seasons, four seasons maybe. And then Matt Smith came in.
But now, is any of them actor-wise, and I'm going to put you on the spot, actor-wise, better than Tennant? As a pure actor, look at the stuff Tennant has done
after
Doctor Who. He was an amazing
person. Matt Smith was great in The Crown, really good as Prince Philip in the early episodes.
Okay.
He was in War Horse. No, that was Benedict Cumberbatch.
The best Sherlock Holmes of them all.
That was by far the best Sherlock Holmes, except for Young Sherlock Holmes. I loved that movie.
When we were in like school.
That was a great one when they were like, the Watson, and they had like the donut dessert scene dancing. That was a great film. It's on Disney Plus, by the way, if you're looking to see that again. I love that. I mean, Tennant is probably more well known as an actor on the side, but I think Matt Smith certainly has done his fair share of stuff. He did one of the Terminator movies.
What movie was he in?
He was in the Terminator Genesis.
Oh,
buzzed hair and stuff like that. And now Amy Pond, Karen Gillan has gone on to have a quite successful career.
We just had her in Gunpowder and Milkshakes.
Gunpowder Milkshake. I'm about halfway through that. She's pretty good. I really enjoy her. Yeah.
I didn't realize how tall she was.
very tall. But she's been great in the Jumanji movie. She's been great in the Marvel movies. Talented, brilliant, fun, you know.
Amanda wants to know if you've ever seen Angela in Manhattan. I don't know.
I have not. So what is that?
You'll have to tell me what that one is. And Amanda says you're an you're an awesome guest already, and Tenet is her favorite also. I'm definitely like, I'm a huge Tenet fan, but I will say that my kids and I's favorite episode is a Matthew Smith episode.
Okay, let's hear it.
Dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Great one. Is with Rory's dad. I love that.
Yeah, that's just one of those like episodes, like when you Angels in Manhattan. Yeah,
Yes, of course, Angels in Manhattan. That's the sort of the ending of the Amy Rory storyline. Very cool, very powerful. Yeah.
Well, they probably could be the scariest of all the characters. Because even when they brought the angels back, in which 13 had an episode where she was locked up.
That was the two-parter when they're on that island, like island and space kind of thing. Yeah, and
what's his name from came and saved him? Who's also a giant head? Captain Jack.
Yeah,
Jack
Harkness. Yeah.
We're gonna just geek out for a minute.
That's all right.
Just understand, folks, this is the complete geek show. We'll just talk about shit that Doug and I want to talk about.
And we are never going to finish a conversation because what happens is we start and then we do these timelines and we never get to where we're starting. You're trying to get to. That's okay.
It's like, that's how I always know when I have a great guest on, when I never finish a conversation. There is no ending to it. We just talk about stuff that we enjoy.
Yeah.
It never finds an ending. But one of the things... Back to San Diego for a minute. He did show me his antique badge. I got to get him to show that up. That is an official San Diego Comic-Con 1992. I think that's Mick Jagger screaming on the front of that badge.
I think that's actually either Michael Jackson in Thriller or the Wolfman.
Oh, that could be Werewolf. Like Werewolf in London?
Yeah, maybe.
There's a shot of that or Michael Jackson transforming.
There you go.
That's a tough one right there. Somebody will look that up and tell us who was
Mick Jagger. That's pretty funny. All right.
I thought it was Mick Jagger. But one of those things, and for those you don't know, Doug, or this is the first time you've listened to him, you need to go back and reacquaint yourself. But Doug is the go-to at the bar if somebody's looking for something of a collectible. He knows where the black market stuff is hidden. He's got all the inside tracks. He knows how to find it. I tell people all the time, probably the coolest thing he's ever told me he had, and I don't remember the right term for it, but basically an original handwritten drawing by the man who found Tutankhamun's tomb. There's a term.
Howard Carter. Yeah. A cartouche drawn and signed and dated by Howard Carter. One of my favorite pieces, one of my favorite stories in collecting as well. So
And that is just like so cool. Like, so that'll give you an idea. We can go from there to who is it that you have every single jersey that he's like ever worn sitting over your shoulder right now?
Mike Trout right there.
You know,
Mike Trout.
The wall.
I have 11 game worn jerseys of Mike Trout, who is a pretty good baseball player. Original artwork behind me. That's from the 2013 season. An artist goes by Art of Words, wrote out every line score from Mike Trout's game that season, every game, and used the way he did the numbering and the letters to make it appear like Mike Trout.
Oh, that's crazy. That's the stuff that's wild to me when people have that kind of talent.
Really irritating, right?
Yeah, like I can't write my name and it be legible. You're drawing whole pictures
out of using numbers and letters. That's the astounding thing for me. I peaked as an artist at about age 4. And really that was the height of my work. There's a picture I drew in the bar around the corner that has it's a lion I drew at age four. It's above a Picasso lion, and that's the highlight of my artistic career.
It's like the bar around the corner has a Picasso in it.
We have, you know, you have above the bar. I have a bar in my office at the end.
Oh, okay.
Full bar. You got to come out here and do an on the road above the bar podcast.
My wife and I have been talking about that. We've met so many great people on the show.
Yeah.
All across the country. They do things like we're involved with the guys from Talking Beards, which are all competitive beard guys that have like big long Aaron. That's a picture of Aaron Sticker. He's got a 2 foot long beard.
Two foot. Wow. I can't even grow like
right. Half an inch. You could get his beard, man, and like cover your whole head and be like, it would be like perfect.
I love it.
But you know, we're involved with those guys. Another guy who introduced me to them, Doug, out your way, Sean Welchiff, who owns California Comfort Barbecue.
Okay.
We met him. So we've got so many people. I tell my wife all the time, if it wasn't for this dirty four-letter word called work.
Yeah.
We have the RV.
Yeah.
Just get in it and go and be done.
I would tell you in relationship to that, I mean, I've been collecting my entire life. And I have had some of the most amazing experiences and have met the most amazing people, whether it be Stan Lee or John Wooden or anybody like that. But the best part of collecting for the 40 plus years I've been doing it are the connections I've made, like friends, like the people I've talked to. And I am blessed that collecting has given me my best friends. It's given me my job, and it's given me those really monumental memories I've had in my life. And so even more than the tangible items that I've been able to collect and to hold, whether it be Marilyn Monroe dresses or JFK rocking chairs or you know, presidential documents, I hold dear most the friendships and the connections that I've made through all of collecting. So I totally agree with you. That's been the best part of all this, are meeting and talking to people.
Did you hear that sound in the middle?
I did.
That was all the name dropping, hitting the ground all at once. But you know, and you're right, man. Like I have, so here in Albany, and I tell people all the time, there's nothing like a home show when it comes to collecting. We have a guy named John. He owns a shop up in Boston Spa, New York, that if you would blink and miss his comic book store.
Sure.
But John knows everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like physically, when I met like Starenko,
mm-hmm.
It was at Albany Comic Con.
Yeah.
We're not talking a big monster show where a guy like you would think a Starenko would be. For those who don't know who Starenko is, go look him up and keep your wife away from him. He is about 900 years old and will still take your lady from you.
He's like Muhammad Ali in that sense. Even at the end of Ali's career, he was a flirt. And if you had a pretty girl on your arm, she was on his arm by the end of the night.
I met Jim Starlin.
And you were like, okay, Ali. Okay. Sorry. Hey, man. Sorry to ruin your
– Yeah. Because even at that age, you still didn't want him to jab you in the mouth.
Yeah. Still got
it. I met Jim Starlin before Marvel let him back in fold. Like, we all knew Thanos was coming, and Marvel was still blackballing that guy and being like, stay away.
It's pretty sad. I mean, that whole story, which is another subject, but it's tough. And really what he did with that 92 storyline and Infinity Gauntlet is crazy. So what it did for Marvel, obviously.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about this, and we're going to get into some of the stuff that comes out. I got to put something on. You've got Amanda Love a little hot and bothered right now when you mentioned Marilyn Monroe's dress.
Oh,
you mentioned that you might have got Amanda Love a little hot under the collar there for a moment.
Well, I hope Amanda Love is sitting down, because we owned the fuchsia dress from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes when she's singing "Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend." the iconic thin dress. I remember we hired a model to come in and put on the dress so we could make a custom built mannequin so the dress could be on display in a perfect form.
Wow.
And really that was that was, you know, one of those most iconic moments in time. And what's really even cooler about that is people come in and they see those things and they connect to it, whether it be someone who studies fashion, whether someone who studies iconography, like that dress has been, I mean, that was, you know, 60 years ago, perhaps, and you still see it in pop culture today, whether it be Madonna, whether it be television, those things become iconic and people can connect. And that's really great to see.
And you nailed it. It's the well, that's pop culture to me.
Yep. Exactly.
The iconic. I guess is, I don't know if I'm saying this right, and I know somebody will correct me. It's the iconic behavior of items is pop culture. It's that item that you see or you experience in a show or in something, and you can see it in the background and go, oh, do you see what that is? That's where, and I'll tell you, and when we were talking about shows and iconic, here's iconic.
Oh,
make.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jim Starling, who Marvel had for a while there, really kind of ostracized, and there's a whole story there. This is what I'm holding up right now for those of you who aren't watching the live, is Iron Man 55, which is the first appearance of Thanos, first appearance of Drax, first appearance of Brother Blood.
Yep.
Now, I have to thank Mike Zapzig from Comic Book Men. We were at a show together that the Podfather had put on up in Lake George, New York. And Mike was there and Ming Chang was there from Comic Book Men. And I told Mike, I said, yeah, you know, the book that I would love to have, my holy grail book, is Iron Man 55.
Yeah.
And I can still remember being a kid in the late 90s or early 90s when Infinity Gauntlet, Quest for Infinity Gauntlet came out, which kind of reintroduced Thanos without a helicopter.
Yeah. Which made it into the Loki series.
It was in the Loki series. But I can remember the guy at the comic book store. My mom, I'd be like, oh, I would love to have the first one when this guy came around. And the guy, my mom asking the guy at the store, and it was a great store in Baltimore. To me, to this day, still the best comic book store name ever.
Yeah.
Mind Bridge.
I like it.
But so the guy goes, they're about four. Now, this is early 90s. The guy goes, they're about $40. You can find them anywhere. You can't touch this book today for at least a grand or better.
No, not at all.
You're not even, and they finally have settled in price.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about, I mean, I was talking with Trevor, my friend, earlier about,
Trevor,
you know,
come in the camera. Trevor, come in the camera.
Trevor, they're watching the camera now.
Come in the camera.
We're talking about, you know, how comic books are sort of different to baseball cards, where baseball cards are sort of done by player. Comic books are done really by appearances within comic books, like Amazing Spider-Man 129 is Punisher, and the general normal Punisher comics aren't as much as, say, those Punisher War Machine number ones and so forth. So it's a different system. And of course, the first appearance of Thanos. Now, I am a big Thanos fan. And in fact, when I knew we were talking about this, I brought a bunch of different Thanos artwork I've had done.
Trevor, are you a comic
book? Over the years. Here's Thanos done as a Lego character.
That is amazing. Trevor, are you a comic book guy? Yes or no?
Very much so. Yeah, I've actually collected pretty much almost everything. But yeah, I ran through the comic book world through the mid 80s all the way through about the mid 90s was my realm of collecting.
So here's my friend. That's my friend Gus. He did this Thanos for me.
Now, see, it's funny. It must be the West Coast. You're saying it's Thanos. Pronounce it right.
Yeah, Thanos is coming in.
Yeah, come on. It must be a West Coast way of pronouncing it.
So here's Stuart Sager. This is one of the most amazing comic artists.
Hold on a sec. Is that
you're going to see today?
Transformer?
Pardon? Yeah, he did Transformers for a long time.
Thanks, Trevor.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So Stuart Sager did a lot of that Transformer stuff. I'm a huge fan. So this is sort of the, I have a nice collection of artwork of him.
That is awesome. That is, see, I,
and here's another Sager, by the way.
See, that's badass. Well, see, you know, Thanos to me is such an amazing character. Nice. Here's why. Now, I don't know what your feelings are about why you love him as a character. Because to me, he is the best anti-hero ever created in Marvel.
Yeah.
Because when he first, when you hear the, so for those who don't know it, in the comics, it had nothing to do with him saving the population and balancing out the world. It was because he was in love with death.
Lady Death. That's Lady right. Death.
And the whole idea was, is he wanted to, he told her, I will give you half of the entire galaxy's population.
Yeah.
And I will, and you can have them. They're yours. Amanda, it's Thanos is my favorite character by far, bar none, in the major books. Outside of the major books,
yeah, I'm with you. Totally agree.
Outside of the major books, you got to go look up Ninjak. He's my other favorite. He's a very impressive character. But yeah, so it had nothing to do with it. But if you also go back and you look at his backstory, you look at the stuff where he was running around with Adam Warlock.
Yep.
In the early days, when he was kind of like, yeah, I'll help you out.
Yeah. And
it was always, you know, there was always a reasoning behind it. He's such everyone who's touched that character has done an amazing, amazing job.
With yeah. That character. I like Thanos because he was flawed, right? I mean, if you remember back to the Infinity Gauntlet series, there's the great scene at the end with him and Adam Warlock sitting there where it's like, did he really want to win? Did he really expect to win? And if it's interesting now in the Marvel world, there's that great speech in the first Avengers movie where Coulson's telling Loki, you know, you're never going to win. You know, you don't have it in you. And that was reminding me a bit of that scene in Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, no, that's a great series.
That was Thanos. Like, to me, that's what I thought about Thanos. And he tried so hard. And you're right. The storyline in the original books is so different. And really, the snap happens sort of in the beginning of that 6-series comic books.
Yep.
Whereas here, it's in the middle of the movie.
Right.
Of the 2 movies happened at the end of the first. So it's definitely a different storyline. Now, I thought they did a good job making it work for today. And I enjoyed it, but I really am partial to that 1991-92 Ron Lim, Starlin, Joe Rubinstein, who was the inker for that series, who I've known pretty well a long time now. That was such an incredible storyline, much like that's the Kingdom Come story in DC for me. I love that Kingdom Come storyline. That's just sort of always resonating with the power and the reasoning and the drive to do the right thing. And we got, you know, make it work. Right. And there's that scene of in the movies when Black Widow tells, you know, what are we going to do if it doesn't work? It is going to work. I don't know what I'm going to do. We got to make it work. So.
Now that's a great, you kind of at segues us to this question then is, when we talk about the rewrites and the changes. So again, I told you we had Lloyd Kaufman of Troma Films on.
Mm-hmm.
He gave James Gunn his start.
Sure.
Without Lloyd Kaufman, Gunn may have made something, but he gave him his first real movie hit, which was Tromeo and Juliet. Got to go back and see it. It's their interpretation, but Lloyd said it on my show. He's like, without James, we don't have Tromeo and Juliet. He figured out, like, I tried to make that movie for 10 years and couldn't figure it out. He figured it all out and kept it with the, what is it? Not whatever pentameter, blah, 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 blah. The terms that for the way Shakespeare spoke. I don't know.
Oh, a pentameter. I am a pentameter.
There you go. Dun, dun, dun. And he figured it out, but that's a perfect example. And I get upset. I've talked to many of my coworkers. I get upset at James Gunn's interpretation of the Guardians.
Sure.
Because I'm a Guardians fan.
Yep.
I'm a guard. Like, stop treating Drax like he's an imbecile.
Yeah.
He's not an imbecile. This is the dude that punched Thanos through his spine and punched his heart through his chest.
Yeah.
You're punk right now. Like, stop treating him that way. All right. Amanda Love has thrown this up twice. Marvel or DC?
Oh, not even close to me. I'm a Marvel guy.
See, I grew up as a Marvel guy, and as an adult, I'm a DC guy.
I grew up. I mean, to me, Marvel was geared more toward, like, with Spider-Man. Like, Marvel did such a great job. Spider-Man was sort of that comic book that brought in the teenagers, right? And kept, like, he represented the teens. And then you've got, like, the first family that, you know, Fantastic Four. They were sort of the comic book that Marvel said, okay, we're going to make this one family-friendly. I love Superman. I love that storyline. I think there may not have been a better crafted character in a superhero movie than Christopher Reeve as Superman. I mean, incredible. And I will tell you, I've always believed, and I've talked about this with movie producers of major superhero films, it's easy to cast a guy who's dressed in a super suit with tons of powers. Casting the alter ego is the hardest thing. Anybody can play Superman in a suit. Being a Clark Kent that works is incredibly difficult, as we've seen in the modern films. Henry Cavill's a great Superman. I don't love the Clark Kent. Like, to me, it just doesn't feel the same. Christopher Reeve nailed it. And you believed in him, and you believed he was doing it for the right reason. And that was so well crafted. The story that I never got into the Joker, and I didn't connect with that. I was a Thanos. I was a Thor, Spider-Man, Punisher. I wasn't even an X-Men guy, but I was a Marvel and am a Marvel guy. I had that conversation earlier today. They've not crafted the storylines to what I've liked. How about you?
See, now I grew up as a Marvel guy. And I think when we were kids, Marvel did it better. They absolutely did it better. They put out a better product when we were kids. And it was the things like all the stuff you just mentioned. But I also think it was my own personal maturity level. DC always felt like they were going after, in their books, not in their shows, because I just introduced the four-year-old to Super Friends, and I watched the episode again and forgot.
Is that Wonder Twins? That has the Wonder Twins, or is that just
the original one? It's Melvin and the other girl and the dog. it's like so different, and I'm like, I'm watching this, but then I think about the books that DC was producing at that time, and I was not that person. So I wasn't Calendar Man. I wasn't the long, was it not Long Halloween? Oh God, I can't think of the name of it right now. But like I wasn't at that maturity level that John Burns, Frank Miller, really dark, the original Dark Knight story, Return of the Dark Knight, when they were really doing some like heavy Infinite Crisis or Crisis on Infinite Earths. You know, they were just really like, they were heavy dark stuff. And then you even look at their sidebar stuff like Sandman and all that was going on at that time. Sandman, Preacher were coming up at those times. So they were getting into some like heavy dark stuff. So as a kid, Marvel all the way. I was like everybody else. Can I get some giant claws to come out of my hand and I could fall off some stuff and nothing hurts me?
Yeah.
And I was a short kid, so I could be short and a badass with claws.
Yeah.
But then you move over and you look at the DC stuff that was going on, and it just always was a darker, heavier. And I think that's why today, I think their books, and I don't know, I'd have to talk to the guy who runs my shop. I feel like maybe their books do better today because they never left that, and the audience is aging and they're not getting the fresh, younger people all the time. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's certainly valid. The maturity stuff is a big part of it. I probably have never just gotten that mature. So what the hell do I know? I do know that I always felt that Marvel was more relatable in that I could go to New York and I could go to the West Coast Avenger. I mean, it was more connected to my mind as opposed to Gotham and Metropolis. For some reason, I just never connected to that.
You don't know what kind of city is?
Now when I know that, like it's relevant to me, and I feel like I'm more connected to it. And I feel like, especially in the movie world now, when we talk about the Marvel universe they created of 20-some-odd films, it was powerful. And I remember, you know, watching the film and the snap, and you see these things happen, and you feel it viscerally, like it's like hitting you. I remember when I was watching the first Superman with Henry Cavill and like the death and the amount of destruction. And I was like, Superman to me was about hope, right? Like that there's good in the universe and that we're moving positively. And I watched that movie. My only hope is that he doesn't destroy my house, right? Like I'm hoping he's not going to ruin everything. And I didn't get that vibe. I think the Dark Knight film trilogy with Christian Bale, which was incredibly done, made or moved DC into the darker side of their universe. And they felt like it worked. And they tried to make Superman more edgy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work like Batman does. And I know in the Marvel world, if you watch Daredevil when they had the series on Netflix, that was a much darker world.
But he's a
dark person. And it works for Daredevil, right? It doesn't work for Spider-Man. It doesn't work. Like, they've done a great job of balancing the world, like the characters, and realizing that, hey, this is a darker character, which means it's going to be a little more violent and a little more bloody and a little more edgy, as opposed to the main universe when we're going to see these things happen. So I feel like they've crafted this world that is more in tune with what people are out there. I agree with you. I mean, the original Dark Knight, Frank Miller, those storylines were incredible. And Sandman, I mean, those things were such powerful storytelling. I just never connected to them like I would connect to Spider-Man and Captain America. And they really created these characters where, like, when I was a teenager, you're reading Spider-Man, he's going through the same problems you are, right? He's got, you know, girl issues, and he's got school issues, and he's got a boss yelling at him to get more pictures of Spider-Man. And then he's trying to relate to, how can I protect my family and still be here? So, like, it just felt more real to me, and I related more to that as a reader. So I'm a Marvel guy, and it doesn't disrespect DC at all. That just wasn't the world I loved.
No, I get it. That's why I said, you know, I think it really is age relatable.
Yeah.
You know, even today, as they've started to turn things into more and more series, more and more shows, I think that's part of the whole where DC owns the little screen and Marvel owns the big screen.
Absolutely. The DC TV world with The Flash, The Green Arrow, those are incredible shows by far, and they're focused. I totally agree with you there.
And Marvel, you know, can't get that right if it meant their life. Even when they get it right, they walk away from it.
They've done better now with shows like WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Loki. They've been pushing toward to that. Yeah.
But look where we're going to take these over on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
We're going to dump movie budgets in TV series, which don't normally have movie budgets.
Nope.
And we're just going to dump this thing so hardcore that you're just going to have to love it, and you're going to have to be into it. But even then, you know, most of those things that they're doing, do they have the power to hold up in the long? Real quick, James is not a comic book guy, he says, but your knowledge and excitement and delivery makes him want to know more. Look at that.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. That's very kind of you.
But I think Marvel screws it up every time on the small screen. Perfect example is, did you watch Cloak and Dagger?
Did not, because that did not appeal to me. And I like those characters in the books, but I just like, I didn't have any need to watch that. Much like Titans on HBO Max or, you know, those kind of shows. I don't have that kind of time, right? Like I'm 48 and yeah.
Go watch. Doug, listen to me. That series was so good done, so phenomenally done. It touches on things that before we had the movements that we have in society, it was already getting into that. Like the main storyline was Cloak's brother was murdered by a dirty cop who pinned it on the brother as doing something and he never did. And it was all about that. And then you had the, you know, Dagger, who her whole gig was, oh, you're a pretty little rich girl, which you never realized she was doing what she was doing because she was coming from an abusive pill popping background.
Sure.
And they hit it all and you're like sucked into it. And the newsflash, folks, the series has been over for almost 2 years. If you haven't watched it yet, go watch it. I'm going to spoil the ending of season two. They tied it. So first off, they tied it directly into Luke Cage.
Yeah.
There's a scene during Cloak and Dagger where they're sitting at a lunch counter in Louisiana, which if you don't understand that, that's a powerful thing in and of itself.
Yep.
They're sitting at a lunch counter in Louisiana and the one gangbanger's got a paper or something in front of him. And the kid goes, Dagger looks at him and goes, what's this? He goes, that's that Luke Cage guy from Harlem got into a fight. Okay. Well, how about that shit? And it was the bridge fight with from there. And the last scene was him making a comment. Yeah, we're going to go to New York and meet with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Which is a huge part of the Cloak and Dagger world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're going to tie it all in together. They finally figured this shit out. Yeah, we're going to cancel.
Yeah, I mean, but really the whole concept of being timely certainly goes back into, say, the X-Men, where you've got Magneto as Malcolm X and you've got Professor X as Martin Luther King, you know, and the positive and the by any means necessary storylines. I mean, it's certainly comic books have always been this great facilitator of getting current events into the hands of kids in a more delectable, positive way. Yeah, exactly. That was the great junkie issue. So really, right?
Yep. So what I'm holding up here, folks, is a Neil autographed Green Lantern, Green Arrow number 85, signed by Neil Adams, which has right on the cover of it, Speedy, who was not his sister.
You know exactly the way. Yeah.
And the line that's in this is, my ward is a junkie.
Yep.
And Green Lantern is kind of a dick because he's like, you always have all the answers, Green Arrow. Well, what's the answer to that?
Move. Captain America was put out there to combat, you know, or to promote patriotism and
punching Nazis.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that was it. You know, punching Nazis in the face. Well, that was always, you know, you look at comic books for their time frame. There's a great novel. I'll probably get the name wrong. The 10-Cent War, which was somebody will look it up and tell me if I'm wrong. But it's basically it gets into why we have the comics code.
Okay, I got it now. Yeah, nonfiction history of comic books. Sure.
Yeah, history of comic books, the 10-Cent War, and it just gets into the whole concept behind where these rogue, you know, y'all want to know about some misinformation.
Yeah.
Besides, go get your shot. And that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to get sick. But that was another example. You know, comic books are making kids into degenerates. And they came up with the whole comic books code. And you don't realize it today. One of the characters we're going to be seeing in Spider-Man, I think he's going to be in Spider-Man, which is the living vampire.
Mobius.
Mobius, the living vampire.
Mobius, yeah.
And the reason Mobius had to be the living vampire is because you couldn't have undead characters like that.
Yeah.
His whole, so they had to make him, well, he's a vampire, but he's alive. So he's the.
And it's so funny, like, as we come in 80 years later, that we look at that and go, really? I mean, I was trying to explain my children the concept of hair bands in the 80s and how people were like, because I think John Bon Jovi came on the radio on classic rock, right, or something. Like, classic rock. I remember when John Bon Jovi came out and it was like hair bands and hard rock, and parents were like, no, you can't. Now it's like Muzak, and you hear it in a theater or in a grocery store. It's crazy. I think about, you know, going back even like to standards and TV standards, and you know, you couldn't have people in bed together. So you had Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in their own beds, and the whole concept of what we're getting out of that, and the, you know, judging and the being the champion of morality and so forth. I mean, there's these huge intertwinings of culture through all of this stuff. And that's really to go back, way back to the conversation of iconic and pop culture. Pop culture is when something sort of transcends its original arc, whether it be the Honus Wagner of baseball cards, that card, to James Dean's attitude, to the Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, those things that have transcended where they are and have entered into the pop culture lexicon. That is pop culture, when it is instantly something that people around the world, or you know, the general area would understand when you say something. When it enters popular lexicon discussions, iconic is when something without any context on its own is recognizable, right? Like the Ten Commandments or the ruby slippers or lightsabers and so forth. And then they become iconic. They transcend where they are and they jump into pop culture and into the regular world where we say things and it makes sense, right?
Absolutely. Now, you talked about TV for a second there with those moments. Is there any moment for you that, obviously I wasn't alive for this moment, but when I understood this moment, there's one for me that really stands out. Is there any moment for you where you say, well, this was really, you know, and you can say like the Maud, where she admitted to like, I had an abortion. Today, like,
no, I don't. I mean, I'm 48. I don't, but I mean, I certainly know about iconic moments of Captain Kirk and
the one I was thinking, Nichelle Nichols,
interracial kiss. Nichelle Nichols, the first interracial kiss, or
Nichelle Nichols.
I mean, those kinds of things have really pushed the hobby. I remember watching the NFL draft a few years ago when the Rams drafted Michael Sam, the first openly gay player to go in the NFL. And I remember on ESPN, they cut to him as he was getting drafted and he turned and kissed his boyfriend. And that was sort of an iconic, that had not happened on TV before. And so those kinds of things, whether they're planned or accidental, I remember those things because it's like, yeah, I've not seen that before. How interesting. I mean, I think the William Shatner, Nichelle Nichols, I mean, that's one of the most iconic moments in television history. But I also go back to, I mean, I remember watching Mary Tyler Moore, right?
Okay.
And my most iconic moment from her is when she's at the funeral for Chuckles and it's trying to be somber and they're talking about, you know, Chuckles' value. She's trying not to laugh. And like stifling laughter as they keep saying Chuckles. Or those kinds of things I remember. To go back, like the stuff I loved, I was a big fan of Knight Rider, you know?
Absolutely.
Hit, right? So we used to go to Universal Studios and they had a kit car there, right? I'm probably 9 or 10 years old and still gullible. And I get in there and I sit in the car and I hear, hello, Doug. It's very nice to see you today. And I mean, I'm freaking out. I find out later my dad tells some guy who's working there, hey, well, you know, my son's name is Doug and Kit. And I bet at 10 years old, I mean, I remember my mind being blown that Kit Knight Industries 2000 was talking to me. I mean, those kinds of things are just so memorable in TV and Greatest American Hero and Dukes of, you know, those things. Those are iconic moments in my time. Whether or not they've transcended and been pop culture is different, but they are the things that you hold on to. And so when you have those kinds of memories, whether it be the first time you read about Thanos in a comic book or you saw something on TV, that's what, when you are older and you have disposable income, that you're going to go back and try to connect to, because you see those things and you have positive thoughts. It releases those endorphins of, oh yeah, I love that. Like for me, baseball cards, collecting with my dad. Today's actually my dad's birthday.
I saw and that. So
we have ice cream in his honor, and I'm sitting around with my friends who helped build the card collection. And I do those things, the ice cream and the opening baseball cards, because they remind me of that great time and places with my dad, sitting in his office Saturday mornings, opening up a box of Tops or Fleer. I collect that now, and I love that. And so we collect the things that we hold dear, right? Whether it be storylines that matter to you, whether it be moments in television or movie or sports history that hold dear, Kirk Gibson in 88, the Marilyn Monroe dress from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, those things that just resonate in your brain for whatever reason. Maybe you are connected to their voice, you're connected to their message, whatever. That's what we're going to go collect. And so this whole world of pop culture and comic cons, conventions and so forth, are because people connect to that and they have found their tribe. They found a place where they can go and they're speaking their common language. They're talking to other people about the first appearance of Thanos, and they're talking about Steranko, and they found a place where they can go and they feel like they're a part of something, whether it be when you go to the drag party in a few weeks. These people have found a place where they're comfortable, where they have found their energy is rewarded and applauded, and they can be what they love and who they love and do what they want and connect to people. That's all we really want, is to connect to something. And whether there's so many ways to do it, for a lot of us, it's collecting comic books and comic art and so forth. Really powerful stuff.
Look at you, brother. I mean, somebody cutting onions in the studio. Brother, but you're right. You're absolutely 110% correct. Our passion for collecting, it is. You can't see, but my wife and I, we just picked up a Pac-Man, a Galaga, and I already had a Marvel Superheroes Arcade 1. Arcade 1 kills it because they just bring back games that we all paid a quarter for, and you saved up your money.
It's your childhood. We didn't have bills. You didn't have to worry about all that kind of. You could go, and you had your happy place, and we all want to be in a happy place, right? And you found a way to bring that back to life.
That you've nailed it, brother. I mean, you're 100% correct. And I want to, so I think I know for you, because I think we talked about this last time, but I can't remember. But one of the things I put out was something that you have in your collection that to the rest of the world, they would look right past it. But to you, this particular item or grouping of items, it is priceless.
Yeah. I mean, you know, really, it's funny. I mean, we showed that earlier, this 92 Comic-Con pass. I mean, I've been going to Comic-Cons for 30 plus years, and I have great memories, and I've met amazing people, and I've done really amazing things. But I think there's this great item, and I'm looking for it. Maybe, Trevor, maybe it's back there behind there. So it goes into baseball, and I don't know if I showed it last time. Is it the – no. I was born May 14th, 1973 in Redondo Beach, California. The next day, Nolan Ryan threw his very first no-hitter. And so my dad held me while he listened to that on the radio. So this is actually – Dick Enberg, Hall of Fame announcer. He was the announcer for the Angels. This is his scorecard from Nolan Ryan's very first no-hitter. And it's got his notes, and it says no-hitter right here. No hit. And it's a great item. It's Nolan Ryan's first no-hitter. It's a Hall of Fame announcer's notes for that. But to me, the value is I was a day old, and my dad listened to this game on the radio with me. So it might have been my very first baseball game because I was born at 11:22 at night, May 14th. And so the value in this is great in terms of what it is.
Right.
But the value to me is the fact that the connections I have to my family because of this, and I'm a lifelong Angels fan. I'll give you another example. 3 years ago was one of the greatest Monday night football games ever. It was the LA Rams versus the Kansas City Chiefs. You can even bring that down, Trevor. So it was supposed to be in Mexico City, and it wasn't. I had just moved to Thousand Oaks, California. And Thousand Oaks, right after I moved there, had a shooting, the borderline country bar shooting. And then we had really bad fires. And the Rams decided for the game that Monday night when they had to move back to LA, they would donate the proceeds and invite all the first responders and the survivors of the shooting to the game. I had season tickets, so I was offered tickets, and I went. My dad and I had for a long time collected memorabilia, right? So the last item my dad and I bought together was Jared Goff's jersey from that game, from the Monday night game. This is the one he wore in what might be the greatest Monday night football game of all time, right? That 54-51 game. I was there, was talking to my dad, texting while he was still in the hospital and so forth. And it helped the community I was living in. It was not supposed to happen. It was one of those serendipitous types of events. So then, of course, it takes time to ship. It arrived at my house December 18th. I took it to the hospital, showed him right before Christmas, and he passed away just after Christmas. So one of the last things we did together was that jersey. Now, the value of it is never going to be commercially what it was I paid for it because it was charity. He's no longer on the Rams and so forth. But the value that that has to me and my mother and my family is profound. I could never sell that except for some sort of charitable way of funding cancer. Like there'd have to be a great thing. Hey, Trevor, grab the box that's up there with the shoes in it. All right. So this is another thing that we got, and anything that was ever given to us as a gift, we kept. And this goes into, and I apologize in advance for name dropping, but we did an event here in Santa Barbara, and the guest.
Do we need to do it again? Do we need to do it again?
We go, oh, yeah, there. The guest was a gentleman named Kobe Bryant. I don't know if you've heard of Kobe.
I might have heard of
Kobe Bryant. So Kobe came, and this is my dad, my mom, and Kobe Bryant. And he donated us the pair of shoes he wore in the game one NBA championship 2010 against the Lakers. Wow. And he signed them game worn. You know, you can see here. Those have a really high value.
Oh, right? God. Like, especially today, like there's
incredible.
Yeah.
But the value it has for us, whether it be the memories that we had, the fact that it was a gift to us for hosting the event, the memories we had, you know, getting to sit and dine with Kobe and interact with him, powerful. And worth so much more than anything monetarily could do. Now, we have talked about selling these shoes with the proceeds splitting cancer research and the Mamba Academy that's actually here in Thousand Oaks as well. Thank you very much. Those things have value beyond
right
the real value, right? Like the perceived value of how much they'd sell for at an auction. It's the memory of your first baseball game, whether you knew it or not. It's the memory of a jersey getting to see the last time of a smile before someone passed away, and the memory of that. It's the memory and the feeling of working with an NBA legend, those kinds of things. They have real value in the heart. And so those things are really special to me. To go kind of another silly thing, I'm an Angels fan, as you can see behind me. I had an incredible full Angels collection. But one of my favorite items was just a signed photo from Mike Socia after the World Series. It just said, "Doug, we finally did it. Go Angels, Mike Socia." And, you know, nothing photo. I mean, it was signed to me. It had – but I met him, we talked, and I got that photo a little bit later. And that was really like, yeah, we – not, you know, I'm right. a fan. Wasn't on the field, but we did it. That – those kinds of things mean so much to me that I the value is negligible to what they're worth to me.
No, I see that. See, that makes perfect sense. And that's something. And I'm glad we got into this, because a lot of people will neglect a collectible and say, yeah. "Well, I don't want that. That doesn't mean anything."
Yeah.
It means nothing to you. You know, when you meet somebody who's got a collection, or if you're listening to this and you meet somebody and they become in your life and you want to know, why do you have that? Why do you keep that? Make sure that you know that there may be an emotion that's tied to that is hard for you to understand. Yeah. You know, I consider myself as a collector. Doug is like on that next level. He's made a career out of collecting. We can get into probably another 2 hours of things that him and I have talked about, where he's bought whole collections and, you know, things that he wanted to keep in the whole. He's a very California guy. I don't understand that whole California thing.
Someday, the weather. You know, what are you going to do?
You got to get him off that left coast at some point, where there's, you know, over here on the right, where there's states and there's places and everybody sounds different. We, you know, we're not just all eating avocado every day, you know.
True enough.
We got to get him off of there. But it really is. You're absolutely right. Like, for me, it's I have all 6 issues of John Byrne's Man of Steel
that I
bought when I was like 6-7 years old, going to the corner store with my mom that had a little shelf of comic books. And the people who owned the store would make sure that there was, each time it would come out, that I had the next one. They're not worth more than about $1.50 an issue, you know, and they've made everything that we've seen movie wise.
Yeah.
Is all for those movies is all based on that. There's no Lois Lane. It's Lana Lang. It's all that. But I get it, brother. I completely understand what you're talking about. And look, we stayed kind of on topic, Doug.
Our problem is that we could do 50 of these on different topics and it would all work out well.
So. Yeah. I'm looking around the basement right now and I'm thinking to myself, well, there's the rack of comic books. There's the video games. There's my dad's pool stick and like his memorabilia. There's my Raven stuff. Oh, there's the albums of the record player. There's the antique bottles.
Yeah.
And I've just got like, sometimes I'm like, all right, well, sometimes it's just I got shit. Like, just I buy shit because I'm like, well, that looks cool.
And yeah.
I have a metal milk jug.
But there, you know, I'm sure out there somewhere, and I've not done the research, there is a milk jug museum. And there are, you know, or if there, I know there are farming museums because I've seen them and I've been to them when you're driving through. And then they would have the history of that. They would have, you know, the evolution of the milk jug or the evolution of the Coke bottle. But what's really interesting is you can track history through these things. I've always found it fascinating. If you have a collection of Cracker Jack toys from the late 1880s, if you research that, it actually mirrors society with, you know, they were metal and then the war came and all the metal went to the war thing. So they went to tin because it was cheap. And then paper drives and they had to stop doing that. And plastics became popular in the 50s. So all their toys became plastic. You can track sort of evolutionary moments in time through something as cool and unique as Cracker Jack.
See, now I would have never thought of Cracker Jack toys to me were always that horrible made that I could never get because the ball always stuck to the side.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, but they started out, I mean, they were baseball cards and they were originally dolls. And I mean, there was some really profound stuff that came from Cracker Jacks, but you could track sort of US history through that. And same with like advertising and sports stars and what they would advertise and who was advertising. And there's this great story of Lucky Strike cigarettes that in the, you know, when their color was green, right? Like that was the Lucky Strike thing. And then when the war came, they said, look, Lucky Strike goes to war. We're sending all our green paint to the military. So our new color is yellow. No, they didn't. They weren't really doing that. It was an advertising thing, but it evoked patriotism and it evoked, hey, we're doing, you know, we're common cause for the enemy, doing our part. It was just green paint. There was no shortage of green paint, but it also let them change their brand a bit in a way that worked for people.
Now you're talking, we'll do this one last, cause I'm curious about this and oh God. So this is too funny. So Amanda Love found out Potsdam, New York has a milk bottle museum.
There you go.
And we are, Potsdam is not far from us. It's a couple hours away.
There you go. That's a day trip for you. Make it happen.
And we're a big dairy area. Like upstate New York is like huge dairy. Like it's ridiculous. Like huge dairy. But what have you seen at, you know, this is your business. This is what, you know, what pays the bills and keeps the lights on is collecting. I don't know how well your OnlyFans page is doing, but I think it's just this.
I don't do enough hot tub stuff, so I'm not really doing well on OnlyFans.
Doug's got to do more hot tub stuff. Let me tell you, sorry.
No, I don't.
but no, so what are you seeing? Because I know I started seeing it because for a while there, I used to fix like the little Chinese four wheelers and dirt bikes and stuff like that. And I enjoyed doing it. But they got to a point recently that I couldn't afford to buy one from somebody it because a guy was like, this Chinese four-wheeler that all four tires were shredded on it. It wouldn't turn over. It might have had a seized motor on it and every piece of plastic was shattered. Wanted $600 for it. And I'm going, bro,
you're not alone. I mean, you're talking about any hobby. Anything, whether it be candle making, whether it be sewing, supplies are harder to get. In the card collecting world, getting top loaders, getting sheets and sleeves for stuff, there's a backlog. The pandemic has created a huge rush of people who were not going out, so they had more expendable cash. They were looking for something to do, something to connect to. We've seen the sky rising prices of baseball cards. There's a Wagner now that's currently around $3.5 million. We've seen Mike Trout and LeBron James cards going for $4+ million. We've seen comic books going crazy. There's an article in the LA Times. Used car prices are up like 78% than what they were a year ago because people are looking for something to do. Their prices for dogs, cats that you want to buy if you're looking for a breed, those have gone up as well. People are trying to find something to latch on to connect to. That the price has gone crazy. Even the same when it's fixing something to replace, right? The parts are hard to get. The demand for the original version skyrocketing. Thank you very much, man. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Doug will have to tune in Friday and see everybody up here and check everybody out, because it'll be Amanda Love, Sherry Love, and Frida Munch on. We'll all be live in the studio.
Great name.
They are. There's one I'll have to get Amanda to remind me. It's something about I'm in a trailer or something like that. It's something along those lines. But now the other side to this is, right now we're saying people are overpaying for their collectibles.
Sure.
They're overpaying. But as this continues to go on, do these prices stick? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
I do. I paid $10
for a car that was $5 2 years ago, but I've now paid $10. Is now that the price?
Yeah. My best guess, and this really is really just random, I think the sky or the ceiling will drop. I mean, it just, I can't foresee it staying as high as it is now. But I do think the floor has risen. So all of these hobbies, all of these things, people have come into the hobby. I mean, we could just use comic books. More people are collecting comic books because they're seeing incredible numbers. They're getting into it. People are going to come in that are buying the big name stuff. They're coming in almost like a meteorite. They're going to come in, they're going to flash, they're going to burn out, and they're done. But we're going to get those meteorites that actually haven't crashed, and they get to the planet, they get to Earth, and they go, hey, this is actually a really cool hobby. I think I'm going to stick around. I think the ceiling will drop, but the floor has risen. So if you were buying something for $5 a year ago, that's $100 now, that may be $40 in a year.
Makes sense.
Because there's more people who are now in there. The top end may come in, do their thing, and go. Or they may come in, they want that one thing, and they're out. Whether it's, you know, Amazing Fantasy, the Spider-Man, or the Superman, they come in, they get their thing, and then they're out. But we're hoping people come in that are like, yeah, I want to go back and buy the John Byrne stuff. Or I want to go back and see Kingdom Come or Marvels, or, you know, the Venom series with McFarlane. We're hoping at least some have come in, and we've stabilized the foundation, and the floor has gone up a bit, but we're hoping that more people have stayed in the hobby, because that's good for the long-term part of it all.
Absolutely. And it's funny you were talking about that. I saw on eBay the other day a Wolverine from the miniseries, the 4-issue miniseries Wolverine.
Sure. Yep.
A 9.9 CGC. I didn't see who it was autographed for. Buy it now for $19,000.
Yeah.
I bought that entire series a couple of years ago. Now look, they weren't CGC, they were just regular all the books, and I've got like two copies of it locked away.
Yeah.
They were like $125 for all of them.
Yeah, and a whole nother show is the discussion about grading companies and their effect on collecting as well, whether it be baseball, coin, comic book, CGC, PSA, and so forth. PGS, is that the coin one?
There's, what's the other one? Begins with a C.
CGC?
Well, there's CGC, PS something, and then there's a third one that started coming out.
Oh, out of CSA?
There's HGA, there's HGA, SGC, we know. There's Beckett, there's CGC.
Yeah. Does Beckett block books and cards or cards?
They do not. They do not do
comics. CBC is the brand that they do their comics under.
Okay, they have CBC. They have a
C's. Are all belong to CGC. All those are under the same umbrella.
But I mean, that's it. We could talk for hours on that.
That's why I said, Doug, you and I could sit here all night and go through.
We could.
And sit here going, oh, hold on. Let me real run in. I got one of them. I got that. Like, hold on, man. I got one of them.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what it is. And I think you nailed it, where these hobbies, and that's why I love having you on, and we're going to have to figure out a way to make this a regular.
I'm in, man.
Maybe we'll start advertising it and having people send us pictures or something of their collection.
That'd be really cool.
And they can say, hey, I've got one of these. You know, Doug, can you tell me about it? Can you tell me where to find this, that, or the other?
Yeah.
I still got my Ali Frazier, the fight poster.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about that one?
Yeah.
Ali, Ali Frazier the fight, and it was.
You got to find the Ali, no Chamberlain versus. Was it Chamberlain versus Ali? Was that the fight? Remember that we had that poster that was Wilt Chamberlain fighting Ali.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I mean, there's some really cool stuff out there.
What, Wilt Chamberlain fighting Muhammad Ali?
Yeah.
I've never even heard.
We'll plan these more regularly. We'll make these happen, man.
Doug and I do nothing but make left turns on this show. There is no hope for any.
Eventually, with enough left turns, we get back to where we started.
We do get back. So we're going to get it ready to tie it up, put a bow, pull the sign down for closing up the bar here, folks. As we're getting ready to do that, Doug, tell everyone if they have collections, if they, you know, where they can find you at, where they can find the collection at.
So I am at my main site where I'm doing sort of collections, consulting, and so forth is thecollectionconnection.com. And that's where I can handle discussions about people who have inherited collections or they have collections they're looking to sell or start up. And I consult on that. I've also got DCD Collects, which is basically where we're creating mystery boxes where you can get autographs or original pieces of art that just started. We just did our first box and it sold out in 24 hours. We have a good friend of mine named Lee Cosey, who's doing some incredible stuff. We have Star Wars stuff that he's doing, that you have a chance of getting original pieces of art, sketches that he's done, as well as some certified authentic autographs as well. That's in the process. That's what I know Trevor and I were working on all day today. So those two websites, dcdcollects.com and thecollectionconnection.com, different purposes, but
how much are the boxes?
They were the first ones were $125, although that was sort of let's get started. They're $150 generally for this product. As it ebbs and flows, there's talks about Doctor Who. We've got Star Trek, Wolverine. We've got some great ones coming up that we're working on.
And is it one of those, like, can you say, like, hey, the box is $150, but the value inside of it is going to be?
So you'll have a chance of getting, for example, the last box we did, there was a one-of-one Daisy Ridley autograph from the Topps Signature Series in 2018. There was Jeremy Bullock as Boba Fett. There were some you know, great options for autographs, as well as there were some incredible sketches by Lee that he did for us that were curated with other cards. So it worked out pretty well. They sold out very quickly, and we're working on series two, and we've got plans to do more as we move forward.
So we got the DCD Collects.
Yep.
We have Doug's only fan page. Go find that.
Don't tell my wife.
Don't tell his wife. This is how he supports his collecting habit. It's through his OnlyFans page. Go find that. Trevor's OnlyFans page. We can just get everybody's, but we have that. So Doug and I probably after this, we'll figure it out. We're going to do this again. I think this needs to be a regular because I enjoy it just as much.
Sounds great to me. I love it.
Folks that are on here, and then maybe we'll finally make it out there and we'll bring the studio and we'll do it from his bar.
We can do it from our bar.
But I think he only serves ice cream at his. I don't know. I
have to bring No, I've got a wonderful assortment of tequila. We've got some great stuff back there. We're in, man.
And I'll bring the bacon since in California.
That's right. Yeah.
I'll bring the bacon and a case of water.
Oh, hey. Yeah, don't get mugged coming in here though. Right, that's pretty desirable.
All right, folks. Well, those of you that are listening to this, checked us out today, make sure you take a moment, like, share away. Make sure you go into that whatever platform you're listening to. Give us a 5-star, especially on Apple. Need that. The more you like it, the more 5 stars you give it, the more people see it, the more we get an opportunity for others. Also, our Instagram is at Above the Bar Podcast, Twitter at Above the Bar 4, email theabovethebarpodcast@gmail.com. Doug didn't say his he's got a Instagram. It's DC. What is it?
DCD Collects.
DCD Collects is Doug's Instagram. So make sure you check out his and start following his and you start seeing the things he's got out there for collections. Anything else, Doug, you, as always, as the man at the bar, you get the last word. What is it, Doug?
Hey man, just find something you enjoy and do it till its fullest. Complete it.
All righty, folks, be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.